We're set. All righty. Good morning. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is 10 o'clock on Wednesday, June 23rd. My name is Julie Fedorchak. I'm chair of the commission. Also present with me are Commissioner Randy Crisman and Brian Crotius. So we have a quorum. I don't have any opening comments except to say again, thank you to the legislature, legislative council, and our staff for making it possible for us to meet in this alternative location, the Peace Garden Room. Our hearing room is under construction. We're getting some new audiovisual equipment installed and IT equipment. And so we could not meet there and we could not broadcast from there. And we wanted to make sure that we kept it as normal as possible. So the legislature accommodated us and we really appreciate that. So with that, I'll turn over to Commissioner Crisman for any opening comments.
I forgot opening comments till you mentioned it now. So I neglected to go back and look up the name of a young man I wanted to highlight. But before I get to him, I don't remember which year, but some years ago in legislature, I had the privilege of sponsoring legislation along with the late Representative Rayanne Kelsch, where we required public buildings to have AEDs. Kind of a maybe unusual move for me to be requiring something like that, but we had a little bit of money. We paid for most of it. Schools and public buildings are to maintain them. And now, of course, AEDs have become much more common. But last weekend at the Shrine football game, a referee collapsed with cardiac arrest. And actually, a young player from the Grant County team, Grant County, of course, home to our own Victor Shook, came in and was the responsible entity who knew how to use the AED. And then along with nurses who were there and volunteered and gave CPR, they saved that referee. And so it brought back great memories of doing that project, as well as just how wonderful some of our youth are to step up in what had to be a frightening time for the high schooler to step up and take responsibility and do it because he apparently knew how. And just to me, an amazing story.
Thank you, Randy. That was an awesome story. And I read about it because one of my friends was one of the nurses who replied or responded, one of the three nurses. So it was really kudos to you and Rayanne for making that a priority and getting the funding and doing that, because I'm sure there are many, many examples of people being saved by those that equipment being available and within reach in an emergency. So,
and I'll say awesome. The impetus of it, how I got involved, was a lifelong friend of mine from Beulah who just came and one morning her 19-year-old son didn't come from his bedroom and had died of cardiac arrest. And then they found out through genetic stuff that there were a fair number of people in their family who shared the same pattern that they could have that just at any time. And of course, it wouldn't have helped him because no one was around, but she got onto this AED thing. A number of lives have been saved at these public facilities where people gather and go into cardiac arrest because of those AEDs.
It's great. It's really great. All right. Thank you for that. Commissioner Crotius, any opening comments this morning?
No comments.
Okay. We have a few items on consent in previous minutes. I move they be approved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. All righty, moving into the regular agenda, I have one item. I move the commission deem complete the application for a certificate of site compatibility conditioned on receipt at least 60 days prior to the hearing of the final site layout plan and the wetland delineation report, and receipt at least 30 days prior to the hearing the updated figures 1 through 10 of the application with the associated GIS shapefiles and all updated studies. including updated sound, shadow flicker, and telecommunication studies. Excuse me. And issue a notice of rescheduled hearing in Bowman Wind LLC 208.7 megawatt Bowman Wind Project, Bowman County Siting Application Case Number PU-21-121.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. So a public hearing on this application is rescheduled for August 24th, 2021 at 9 a.m. Central Time, 8 a.m. Mountain Time at Four Seasons Pavilion West Wing in Bowman. On March 30th of 2021, Bowman Wind filed an application for this project to construct up to 208.7 megawatts of wind generation consisting of up to 74 wind turbine generators and facilities in Bowman County. We had this previously scheduled, and then the company wanted to spend a little bit more time working on some issues with landowners. And so they asked for it to be rescheduled. So we rescheduled it now at this date. What is interesting also about this is last week, the Game and Fish Department asked, or in the last couple of weeks, I guess I don't know exactly the dates, asked us to request that the final site layout be available 60 days prior to the hearing, as well as the wetland delineation report. And this is really triggered by the new law, although it isn't that new. I think it was not this session, but the session before, that required the all the projects to have their final, no, it required all of the agencies to have feedback on their on any application to us 30 days prior to the hearing. So it required, there couldn't be last minute filings from the state agencies or federal agencies. They had to give the companies more of a heads up about what their concerns were. So there's this 30-day deadline. Well, that really requires then the companies give the agencies advance notice so they have time to review what the final plans are, because they claimed that their last minute filings were a result of the company's last minute changes. And so backing up to 30 days prior to the hearing for state agencies and federal agencies to have their comments in, then makes it logical to have a 30-day prior to that deadline for agencies to have access to what the company's final plans are. So this is really kind of in keeping with that timeline and procedure. And I would anticipate that this is really the timeline that we'll be looking for companies moving forward for applications and for feedback from the state agencies. So all of anyone coming here for a site certificate should anticipate that they're going to need to have built in these timelines to accommodate the state agency's feedback. And in this case, in the case of wind, that'll be a 60-day prior to the hearings. So with that, I just wanted to provide that additional background and context.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. One more thing on that. I do want to acknowledge and express appreciation to the company, Bowman Wind, in this case, for quickly being able to accommodate that timeline and allowing us to keep that August date by getting the final plans in. I think they're going to have to be in by the end of this week, Adam, or was it the end of next? Was it the end of last week? End of this week will be the deadline that they have to get the final layouts into the office, and they were able to accommodate that. So thank you. Up to you, over to you now, Randy.
My first agenda item, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact conclusions of law and the order in Basin Electric Power Cooperative 230 KV Transmission Line Project, Montreal County Siting Application Case Number PU-21-49.
Second.
On January 27th, Basin Electric filed the application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit for 26.5 miles of 230 KV electric transmission line and then associated facilities, all of which will be in Montreal County. The public hearing was held on May 6th at Stanley. The issues that we considered were, there are three, will the location and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Second one was, are the proposed facilities compatible with environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? And third, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continued system reliability and integrity and ensuring that the energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? So from the evidence, we have learned that the power line will originate at Basin's existing Nesset substation and terminate at its proposed North Shore substation, again, all of which are in Montreal County. The project will be constructed using about 155 galvanized steel poles. Both the single pole and the H-frame structures will range from 70 to 120 feet tall. Structure spans will range from 650 to 950 feet with an average span of 800 feet. The basin plans to begin construction of the project in July here in just a few weeks and complete construction by December of 2022. Basin conducted surveys for wildlife, threatened and endangered species, critical habitats, wetlands, water bodies, noxious weeds, trees, and shrubs. The State Historical Society determined that there had been a good faith effort to avoid impacts to significant sites. They provided, provided that all recommendations are followed. They also approved Basin's unanticipated discovery plan for cultural resources. Basin has secured easements with 53 of the 55 individual landowners necessary for the project, as of June 17th. Basin's studies and surveys did not record any exclusion areas within the survey area for this project. Family farms and ranches are selection criteria. Most of the structures on the project route will be placed on quarter lines or the edge of fields or property lines to reduce impacts to agriculture. Temporary construction disturbances will be confined to the right-of-way and access roads. And I'll point out Basin compensates landowners for these types of crop losses. Approximately 7 acres of cropland, though, will be permanently removed from production for construction of that North Shore substation. The visual effects on the adjacent area is a selection criteria, and the project will be visible to landowners and travelers along roadways. However, existing transmission lines, oil and gas well pads, and roads are already present in the viewshed. Basin is committed to avoid direct impacts to all wetlands, with the exception of one wetland impact from an access road that will be permitted under nationwide permit number 12. Basin will provide weed control during the construction and reclamation. The project will be constructed pursuant to the requirements of the National Electric Safety Code, and the total cost to construct the project is approximately $57.4 million. That is kind of my assessment of the facts that we learned on this. So under this order, if modifications are made to the project, Basin will complete a Class 3 cultural resource survey for any previously unsurveyed portions of the corridor affected by construction activities. And they will submit cultural resource finds to SHPO for review. And they will file a copy of SHPO's response to that review with us prior to beginning construction in those areas. The certification relating to order provisions and the tree and shrub mitigation specifications are incorporated into this order. basin must obtain all other necessary licenses and permits prior to commencing construction. And so with this order, certificate of corridor compatibility number 222 and route permit number 232 are issued to Basin Electric.
I would, well, two points. One, Commissioner or Chair Fedorchuk has recused herself from this order and application. All right, I think I'm back on track. Nothing better than when it's going to be a 100 degree day and you feel like you're battling a summer cold. So go figure. So she's recused herself from the process on this particular order. So she probably won't be saying a lot, but just so everyone is aware of that. And I think people following the proceeding know that. This is a significant project in the northwestern part of the state. It's being constructed to serve load growth, and that's being driven by oil development in the Bakken region in part. But it's not just to serve customers in the Bakken. It's also to, and when I mean customers in the Bakken, I'm talking the oil and gas industry, but it's also to make sure that reliable power is delivered to the small towns throughout that part of the state, whether they're agricultural entities, whether they're homes. So it's an important project. As noted, as Commissioner Christman noted, 53 out of the 55 landowners have signed easements. So there are two remaining. I believe Basin continues to be engaged in what I feel are good faith efforts to appease and work with the final two landowners. But that's always the big balancing act when you have two landowners who aren't quite there yet in terms of signing the easement. You also have to look at the other 53 who are in favor of the project, and it is meaningful to them from an easement standpoint. But I'm confident a resolution will be found at the last two, and that that can be wrapped up on the easement side of the equation. So I think it's a good project. I believe the application was very complete. I think it was thorough, and that made the hearing go very smoothly. So it was good to see the landowners that were concerned. They did show up at the hearing. They expressed their thoughts, their views, and as did the company when they were going through that particular hearing. So I thought it was a good process. I think it's a solid application, and I'll support the order as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission approve the Falkirk Mining Company's request for a variance to the 10-year revegetation responsibility period for 11.3 acres of reclaimed cropland located in the southwest quarter of Section 22, Township 146 North, Range 82 West of McLean County, where revegetation was delayed until stockpiles were removed and reclaimed, and Falkirk Mining Company variance permit NAFK-8405 application, case number RC-21-158.
Second.
So a variance from the 10-year revegetation responsibility period will allow these two little areas where topsoil stockpiles were reclaimed in 2014 to be bond released with the adjacent lands that were reclaimed from 1992 through 2012. We have a policy memorandum, number 20, which allows us to grant variances to the 10-year revegetation period for water management features, access trails, and soil stockpile sites, like these two. The variances must be small in size when compared to the entire reclamation tract, and the affected land must meet the reclamation success standards when final bond release is requested. Small in size in this situation is generally defined as comprising not more than 20% of a reclamation tract. The permittee in this case must affirmatively demonstrate that reclamation of the area will provide equal or greater protection to the environment and to public health and safety. The variance area in this case covers about 7.5% of the reclaimed tract in the southwest quarter of Section 22. There is an adjacent project, but we're just even using the part that's in this quarter. That acreage for the whole quarter is 150.2 acres, so it comes out to 7.5%, well under the 20% maximum. The reclaimed stockpile sites have been farmed with the adjacent reclaimed cropland since 2014. The proposed variance areas were inspected again this year on May 18th. Falkirk anticipates submitting the bond release application in late 2021 or early 2022, and the Reclamation Division has completed its review of the request and recommends approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
My last agenda item, I move the commission approve the rider that increases the amount of self bond number SB-9501-1 and approve collateral bond number CB-9501-9. That covers all permits held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine. I further move the approval of the cancellation of collateral bond number CB-9501-8 and Coteau Properties Company self bond and collateral bond approval, case number RC-21-225.
Second.
So the current bonds for the consolidated bond area covering all permits at the Freedom Mine total $146 million. The total bond amount has to be increased as a result of the new reclamation cost estimate that is based on a worst case reclamation condition. The minimum bond amount will now be $174,435,000. Coteau has filed a rider to increase the amount of the self bond and provide a new collateral bond that totals $186 million, so almost $12 million more than the minimum amount. We allow mining companies to provide no more than 90% of the bond amount in the form of a self bond. The other 10% must be in the form of a collateral or surety bond, because we assume that funds from collateral or surety bonds would be more readily available than funds from a self bond to begin reclamation work in the unlikely event of a bond forfeiture. The amount of the new collateral bond in this case is $18.6 million. That's 10%, of course, of the 186 total. And the self bond amount is being increased to $167,400,000. With Basin Electric as the third-party guarantor. Coteau and Basin meet the applicable bond self-bonding requirements. And the key one is that Basin meets the criteria by having a bond rating of A from both Fitch and S&P. Staff recommends that we approve the increase in the self-bond, also the replacement collateral bond, and approve the bond rider that effectively cancels the existing bond for the Freedom Mine. And again, I just want to highlight that they are going over the minimum bond amount by almost $12 million, which then allows them some flexibility if there's a mine plan change or just a very small increase in potential reclamation costs to not have to go through this lengthy process just because of a small change.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just wanted to mention one thing. So because of the companies doing a self-bond portion on this, and it's tied to the bond ratings, there's a lot of talk about ESG, environmental social governance, and how those new requirements that financial institutions are layering onto their reviews of companies. And even the bond rating agencies are getting into that business and creating ESG standards that companies now have to meet. This is where that comes into play. I don't think yet, but down the road, the companies talk about they need to meet these standards, they need to meet these standards. This is an example of where that could impact them. If their bond rating slips because they don't meet the ESG standards that are being set, they then might not qualify to be able to self-bond. And then they have to go in the market and purchase this bond, which is going to be extremely expensive and add another high layer of costs to mining companies and all kinds of other companies. So these, that's just, I just wanted to point out like a real example of how that's could and will down the road impact issues here in North Dakota and why people like, you know, the governor and every, you know, companies, et cetera, are kind of scrambling to understand what ESG is and to figure out how they can best comply with these standards while staying true to their own missions.
A good point to highlight. Thank you for doing that. And it also gave me time to just think and of another thing that should be pointed out. A lot of times I think the citizenry think of our reclamation program as, you know, making sure that they're keeping up with reclamation, that things are getting put back, that there's not a bunch of erosion going on out there, that plants and trees and shrubs are being replanted appropriately and that kind of thing. I think the complexity and detail of this shows the importance and the thoroughness of our reclamation program to be able to evaluate these things and go through and make sure that we have everything documented appropriately. And we have several of them down here today. And so I just want to thank them for all their work and preparing this and making sure that, that the people in North Dakota are covered on this.
Thank you, Randy. One final thought on ESG that I forgot to mention. The challenging thing about ESG is, so the bond ratings typically have been designed to send a message about a company's financial strength and their ability to pay back or be good for the money that they have. The ESG standards, environmental social governance, really, in my mind, are a stretch from speaking to the financial capabilities of a company. And that's why I think it's, you know, something that we all need to watch and pay attention to. And I don't know how you or where you can kind of bring them back to reality, but it's going in a direction that is different from typical financial reviews of companies and reviews of the strength of their ability to pay back their loans. So it's a concern.
ESG is a big topic right now, and there isn't one, or actually, let me put it this way: all three of the investor-owned utilities that we regulate are already being impacted by ESG. When they go to the capital markets and they're looking for favorable loan rates, there's no question that this is coming into play. I would also agree that I don't think it speaks to the financial strength of those organizations by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a movement and it is growing by the day, literally. And when you have financial institutions that, in effect, punish well-run businesses if they are not deemed compliant in that area, those areas, actually, it's a significant concern. And we could have a very long conversation about ESG. We could have a very long conversation about corporations in the country that are claiming to have all renewable power when in fact they don't. It isn't all renewable that goes to a data center, for example. They do an electron match. They say that we just get the clean electrons, we get to claim those. But when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing, They're utilizing coal-fired electrons, could be gas plants, could be nuclear, but it's an area of concern, frankly, because I think it's going to ultimately impact reliability of the grid. And again, it's a huge conversation, and not to go down this path anymore on this particular order, but it's definitely out there and something that we're going to continue to deal with in particular orders and with particular entities.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, looks like that's the end of Randy's portfolio. Over to you, Brian.
All right, thank you. I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and Public Service Commission Anyway Services LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-20-427.
Second.
The first thing I'm going to point out is Anyway Services. Anyway is spelled E-N-Y-W-H-E-Y. So worth noting. But this goes back to a complaint we received last fall on October 15th. One call complaint was received from Montana Dakota Utilities alleging a violation by Anyway Services of North Dakota Century Code, the one call excavation notice system. The commission sent a letter to Anyway enclosing the complaint. Anyway did respond in a timely fashion. And then on current month of June 8th, 2021, a consent agreement between Public Service Commission advocacy staff and Anyway was filed for the resolution of the complaint. This goes back to an expired ticket. Anyway did get a ticket to do the excavation work, but when they began the excavation work, the ticket had been expired for 11 days. During the excavation, there was damage to a 2-inch natural gas main line, and the estimated cost of the damage was approximately $1,000. Gas service to two customers that was affected. And in North Dakota Century Code, it provides that an excavator may not use a location more than 21 days or any extension of that period after the planned excavation date unless the excavator has made previous arrangements with the operators affected. And since the excavation was not being made during a time of emergency, which is an exception to what I just read, Anyway did violate North Dakota Century Code because they had not, again, had not renewed their excavation location request prior to the expiration of the 21-day period. Under the consent agreement, Anyway agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $1,600 with $800 suspended on the condition that they commit no further violation of North Dakota One Call Law within 5 years of the date of the order. Anyway will make $800 payable to the Public Service Commission. They'll have 10 days to do that upon approval of this, or I should say service of this order. So whenever we suspend a penalty, it is an indication that the company has not had any previous violations. So when it's the first time around, that's one of the factors. How they are to work with is another factor. They were cooperative and were helpful and to staff in the process, and that also helps quite a bit. So hopefully they learned a little bit, and just a reminder for all excavators out there, we're in the throes of summer construction and the tickets are good for 21 days. And if they expire, they have to be renewed before they can go back in or begin excavation for the first time, if that's the case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, next, I move the commission issue the order on notice of probable violation and Public Service Commission, Liberty Midstream Solutions LLC, Pipeline Safety Enforcement, case number GS-20-461.
Second.
This goes back to a complaint received on July 1st of 2020. I take that back, not a complaint, but it was a result of a gas pipeline safety inspection done by commission staff on July 1st, 2020. This was a part of a biannual operations and maintenance inspection. And during the inspection, which was done remotely at the time due to COVID-19 travel restrictions, staff noted several violations, which I will explain. On January 27th of this year, a notice of probable violation was issued by staff to Liberty. And actually, in this particular case, on February 19th, the commission did receive the $5,500 civil penalty payment from Liberty, and I'll get into the details of that. So this is to wrap up this particular case. But what happened, five things in terms of the violations. The first, Liberty failed to conduct patrolling on the regulated transmission pipeline frequency required by federal regulations. It's 49 code of federal regulations. Number two, they failed to conduct leakage surveys on their regulated transmission pipeline at the frequency required. Number three, they failed to submit a national pipeline mapping system notification and or an NPMS, no change notification regarding their regulated transmission pipeline at the frequency required. Number four, they failed to conduct atmospheric corrosion inspections on their regulated transmission pipeline at the frequency required. And number five, the final one, they failed to inspect each cathodic protection rectifier or other impressed current power source on the regulated transmission pipeline at the frequency required. So a notice of probable violation, as mentioned, was issued outlining those five points. The civil penalty ensued in the amount of $5,500. And as a part of the process, Liberty did not contest the allegations of the probable violations. Again, they did issue the payment to the Public Service Commission and admitted to those things not being done correctly, as stated. One thing I will say, and in work visiting with staff, Liberty was very cooperative, very helpful, very good to work with. And I think more importantly, are equally as important, but really more importantly, looking forward, they have new protocols in place to prevent this from happening in the future, which is really the type of behavior that we want to see when these violations occur. You can look back, but it's also very important to look forward and know that the proper steps are in place to prevent this from happening in the future. This was a third-party inspector. They were involved that Liberty was using, but when a company contracts with a third-party inspector, they are still responsible for the work of that inspector in the field. And I think just to underscore the importance of the work that our staff does when they go out and they inspect companies in terms of the inspection, records inspection that companies are required to do, field inspections that companies are required to do. This happens literally each and every day, not just in North Dakota, but across the country. These pipelines that are in operation are looked at, they're inspected, and when a day goes by, or a week goes by, or a month, or longer, and the public hears absolutely nothing in terms of a pipeline incident, that's the result of these inspections. It's the result of the work that companies do to keep pipelines operating in a safe manner out in the field. So it's one of the behind-the-scenes things that happen, one of many that Public Service Commission is involved with, whether it's rail inspection, gas pipeline inspections, safety protocols, et cetera, but it's really important work. And every quiet day is a good day for obvious reasons. So thank you to the staff. Caleb, Conrad, thank you for your work to keep the program operating at a high level no incidents resulted from these particular violations, but catching them will certainly prevent anything from happening in the future that would obviously be very negative and compromise public safety. So thank you for the work you're doing. Greatly appreciate it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Go ahead, then.
I do have a question. I wanted to get with staff on this in advance and just didn't get to it. But so you mentioned a number of things that were found that were in violation, the patrolling, the leak surveys, the corrosion inspections, the cathodic protection checks, and the mapping notifications. So we do an inspection and find those things aren't being done. They pay a penalty of $5,500. How do we know now that those things are being done other than the company saying, yeah, we're going to start doing our inspections and patrolling and stuff, but do we know that they are? Does this lead to a more frequent checks on our part, or what really makes clear to us that the behavior pattern has changed?
Yep. Well, it's a very good question. It's one that I did posed to Conrad and Caleb. And the answer is that we will be back. The inspectors will be back within the next 6 to 9 months to follow up with Liberty. It would be a part of their biannual inspection schedule, but they will be back to ensure, verify that these things are now being done correctly. So, and it wasn't that they weren't being done. They weren't being done at the proper frequency. So things are stretching out farther than they should have, which then can potentially create a problem or an issue when they're not keeping up on them from a timing standpoint. But I did pose that they'll continue to stay in contact with Liberty and be out for what I would imagine now will be a in-person or a physical inspection on site, I should say, inspection due to the fact that we don't have COVID restrictions in place anymore to get folks out in the field. But that's just another point where I thought staff did a really good job through the whole COVID restriction period in terms of still conducting these inspections. It was remote, but they were still doing the work, and not quite as it's not as ideal as being there on site, but they're on top of it, and they'll be keeping an eye on Liberty to make sure it's done properly in the future.
Thanks for clarifying that. And then my other question is, does this Liberty have an emu?
Have a what?
Does Liberty Company have an emu?
You know what? I'm going to defer to staff. Caleb, they weren't there in person. Do you know? Do they have an emu?
Thank you for that question, Commissioner. I do not believe they do.
Thank you. I want to add just a couple thoughts to that, even though it's tough to follow that joke. But I do think, you know, we hear concerns sometimes from policymakers about what is, you know, when there's standards and checks required by the companies themselves and lots of dollars spent on inspections, why does the government have to come in and look at it again? And here's why. I mean, this is an example of the value of independent third-party inspectors going out and looking at what the companies are doing and either verifying, yes, all is in order, or finding things that need to be improved. And this, you know, this will result in a safer system, potentially, you know, prevention of a bad accident, and for sure, better informed staff members within the company who can now better apply the standards that are expected and ensure the safety. And that's just a win for everybody. So good job, being out there and looking closely at the records and making sure that the companies are following these and making sure that all these protections that exist actually do some good rather than just aren't words on a paper. So thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. That concludes our regular agenda. We have a couple announcements and then we'll take a brief break for questions. Looking ahead at our schedule in July. We jump to July. Yeah, so July 12th, we have a formal hearing on the Dakota Gasification Carbon Dioxide Gas Pipeline in Mercer County. And that will take place in Beulah at the Energy Wellness Center. So Randy can get some time on the elliptical during the lunch break. The NARUC, this is not on our schedule, but we should add it, July 18th through the 21st. The NARUC summer meeting is going to be held in person in Denver. So I don't know. I'm planning to attend. I don't know if my colleagues are or if they're still thinking about it. And then July 22nd and 23rd, we have set aside time for the formal hearing for the NSB electric rate case. And so that is a peek ahead to the upcoming month. With that, we'll take a brief recess and answer any questions.